Well, yeah, and I think, I mean, I make the difference, the distinction between what people actually saw and how they interpreted it.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, there are a lot of bodily resurrection stories among pagan literature. But
actually,
I mean,
there's not
other,
that precedes
other...
Christianity. And, in fact, there's a new book, just come out, I think it was 2001, 2002, by T.N.D. Mettinger, called The Riddle of Resurrection. Now, this guy's a skeptic. He does not believe, like most do. And in this book, he says that the consensus of scholarship today is that there are no dying and rising gods that predate Christianity. But he says, I'm going to take issue with that. And he goes through here and he says, there's some new evidence. And he goes through and he says, I'm going to stand alone. And he says, there are definitely three, maybe five, that predate Christianity. But then he goes back and he compares it at the very end. This guy's not a Christian. He compares it with Jesus. And he says, what about him? Is he a dying and rising God? And he says, yes, he is. But the difference, and he names a bunch of differences, and he says, so there's no a priori reason that we can think of why Jesus is of the same genre or a parallel to these other dying and rising
gods. Or that Christians borrowed.
That's a whole separate issue from what was acceptable in the culture. I mean,
right.
It's one thing to say that the Christians got the idea from someone else, but it's another one to say, and you guys haven't said it, at least not here, which is the idea that the pagans completely didn't accept the idea of a bodily resurrection. Those are two different, completely different arguments. Or that pagans didn't interpret any appearances or experiences they had as of a bodily resurrection. I mean, those are completely different things.
Well, you got Aristeas, who's mentioned by Herodotus, but other than him, it's really difficult to find something that would sound like that.
Richard, did you say
there were any examples?
Well, they're all pretty different.
Did you say there were bodily resurrection accounts before Christ?
Well, there are some, yes, but
like what?
There's a ton of resurrection accounts that clearly could not have been inspired by Christianity, for example, regardless of their date.
Well, let me name them.
If you want a really comprehensive list of them.
Well, just name one.
As I've been able to build.
No, what's a case for a non-Christian God who was raised from the dead, and we know the text is pre-Christian?
Well, believed to have been raised from the dead.
But that's fine. Yeah. What's a good pre-Christian example?
The first example, of course, is Salmoxis.
He never died, or Salmoxis never even died.
But remember, that's the unbeliever's explanation. That's like taking...
That's what Herodotus
said. That's like
said.
Taking Celsus against the Christians and taking his interpretation of what the Christians were.
No, Herodotus himself said he never died.
No. Yeah, Herodotus is the unbeliever. He's talking about a foreign religion. He's talking about the Thracian cult, and he's basically attacking the Thracian cult, or at least disparaging it by coming up with a rational explanation for what they believe.
Okay,
but
no,
if you want to talk about what the Thracians believe...
But let me read
directly
from Herodotus here. This is in History's Book 4, verses 95-96. He says, Salmoxis made a hall where he entertained and fed the leaders among his countrymen and taught them that neither he nor his guests nor any of their descendants would ever die, but that they would go to a place where they would live forever and have all good things. So according to what Herodotus is reporting, Salmoxis reported, Salmoxis was saying that he and his friends would never die. You don't have a death, you don't have a resurrection.
Which is typical.
Well, but he goes on to say, though, doesn't he say that they presumed he was dead when he disappeared, and then he came back and they presumed he'd been returned to life?
Well,
right? That's what they believe.
Who?
The Thracians. I mean, Herodotus and the Greeks had their own little snide rationalistic explanation about this trick he pulled. But,
yeah, but there he's saying...
The Thracians didn't believe that the trick was pulled on them. If they did, they wouldn't believe the story at all.
Okay, but he's saying that Salmoxis is telling their guests that they and their descendants will never die.
He's recounting their beliefs.
Well, yes, but he's also talking. I mean, that's the same Pythagorean view regarding the soul never dying.
Well, that's correct.
He's not talking about your physical body that you have right now is never going to die.
Richard, that's typical of the Greek mind of that time. But that's not bodily resurrection. In fact, I would argue it's neither resurrection nor bodily. It's neither one. I mean, the whole Tom Wright argument for 500 pages is that you find virtually no case or no case of bodily resurrection. Now, one of the objections is, au contraire, there's all kinds of cases of ghosts and disembodied whatevers. Well, sure, they believe that. But his point
we could go forever on
there's
this.
But there's no case of bodily resurrection. No claim.
Go to Google, and type in parentheses, was resurrection deemed impossible? question mark and my name, and then you should come up with my fairly comprehensive list of all the bodily resurrection accounts. Not all of them predating Christianity, but even the ones that post-date Christianity are not inspired by Christianity.
Well, that's a good point. We would agree to that.
Anyway, I mean, that again is getting off, I think, on a whole other track of where I wanted to end up. I guess the thing is I asked you for a good example,
and you said Herodotus. I said, and I'm quoting from Herodotus, and Herodotus is saying that Salmoxis is telling his followers that they will never die. And if that's what Salmoxis is saying, it's not a resurrection.
You're not reading the next account, the next part, where he's talking about how Salmoxis was presumed dead when he disappeared and then he came back.
Right, but if I remember correctly, and it's probably been a couple of years since I've read this, Herodotus is saying that when he came back, that's what the others were saying, that he had dug this hall, that they had been down in that hall for a while and had come up.
That's what the doubters were saying.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. You're explaining that already.
You're acting like what Celsus said against the Christians is
not at all.
I mean,
not at all, because what Herodotus is reporting there is that Salmoxis is saying they would not die, and then all of a sudden they disappear, and then they come back. Others were saying, no, they went down in that hall or whatever. So, yeah, they're the doubting ones.
I don't think you're interpreting that correctly, but like I said, we could go on that forever. I mean, I'd like to get to the next question, because we're running out of time, actually.
Well, history 4, 95, and 96, so the listeners can look that up for themselves.
Yes. And go ahead, Major, we have at least three or four more questions you want to ask here.
Well, yeah, I mean, but we don't have time for all of them.
Well, go ahead.
I have a more theological question, because this is one that's kind of bugged me for a while, and I'm not really sure how Christians answer it, so I would like to know, actually, how they answer it. And it's the way I've worded it, it sounds kind of frivolous, but it really isn't. I mean, if you understand what I'm trying to get at, I'm being serious here. And just to put it in this terms, using an analogy, I'd like to know, why does God give me more evidence that smoking cigarettes is harmful than he gives me that Jesus lives? And, I mean, does that make sense, the question?
Well, I think, can I answer that one, Doc?
You absolutely.
Yeah. Richard, I think the evidence is there. You just don't want to see it. You've got people like Bultmann who said that to doubt, and I'm quoting him here, to doubt the historical existence of Jesus at all was reserved for, I'm sorry, this is Borncom, who was by no means conservative. It was reserved for an unrestrained, tendentious criticism of modern times into which it is not worthwhile to enter here. Bultmann went on to say, there's no sane person who can doubt that Jesus stands as founder behind its historical movement. Now, I'm not saying that you're insane. I think you're brilliant. I think your IQ is certainly far better than mine.
But that wasn't about the resurrection, though.
Huh?
That statement didn't mention the resurrection. It was
what I'm saying, you're saying doubting the existence of Jesus here.
Well, you've got people like
Dale Allison, the deist, who just recently, I mean, last year, he said no responsible scholar can find any truth in the hypothesis that Jesus never existed. And Burridge over at King's College in London, he said that I have to say that I do not know any respectable critical scholar who says that anymore, that Jesus never existed. And he said that in 2004.
I mean, that's a whole other issue, because that's not the resurrection.
No, but you just said, why did God give you more evidence that cigarettes are bad for your health than that Jesus never existed?
Yeah, I think it's a good question.
Your answer to my question is that there is enough evidence
right, to
warrant any rational person believing, and just for some reason I'm not accepting that.
But if I may, I was going to mention something along these lines earlier about sufficient evidence, and... again, my ability to accept supernatural claims would be definitely increased if, for instance, I could see an amputee grow a limb back or something like that.
What about spontaneous remission of cancer in the presence of prayer?
What if you have spontaneous remission of cancer with no prayer? How do you explain that?
Well, first of all,
that does happen. That's why there are naturalistic explanations for that, Gary. That's okay. I've never seen anyone grow a limb back. That would be some really interesting evidence for the supernatural.
Reggie, do you know any documented cases that are written up in medical journals where people had spontaneous remission? In other words, cancer cells in this tumor, they take the tumor out immediately. There's no cancer cells. Do you know a case like that that's been written up in a medical journal?
I'm not up on
prayer?
Medical. I'm not up
I,
on.
I don't. I don't don't even know of the case you're speaking of. So,
well, I have three of those cases, and I have in the two double-blind experiments. I'll be glad to give you both the references, and I'll give you the references for any of the 10 medical journals on near-death experiences.
If you don't already have my email address, it's rcarrier, R-C-A-R-R-I-E-R, at infidels.org. That's infidels, plural, .org. I'd be delighted to see any of the study citations that you have.
Indeed. Yeah, it seems like most of these things are always internal, and that is quite, you know...
Related to my other question,
strange.
Though,
go ahead.
And maybe this can get us... Because obviously the answer to that was pretty simple, but maybe we can get in another direction with this particular question. And this is another kind of theological question. And I put it in three questions, but they're all related. It's really one question.
All right.
Why did the risen Jesus only appear to his followers and to only one or two previously obscure enemies among the thousands opposing his gospel? Why didn't he appear to Pilate or Herod or Caiaphas or the Roman Senate? Why didn't he also appear to deliver the gospel to China or to the Americas, as the Mormons claim he did?
Or everyone at the same time, I've always argued.
For example.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But how do you explain that theologically? I really don't know, so I would like to know.
Yeah. If he wants us to know him.
Okay, Richard, look, I'm glad you added, except for a few skeptics, because a lot of people just say he only appeared to believers, and that's not the message
right.
in the New Testament. But Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15 that Jesus appeared to over 500 brethren at one time. We have cases in the Gospels where there are groups of people and somebody's doubting. Now, this is just an inference. I mean, I can't prove this to you because it doesn't give a breakdown, doesn't do any psychological testing on people who are present.
Right.
But if there's 500 people present, just take Jesus' normal sorts of, gospels say he heals 5,000 people at one time. I've got to think a majority of those people present are not believers. You can say, well, okay, but what about after his resurrection? Well, still, the news isn't what it is today. You can't turn on Fox News and find out Galilean prophet rises from the dead.
We don't have their accounts. So, they didn't write them down. I mean,
right.
You know what I'm saying? I mean,
a few weeks later,
claiming 500. We don't even have like an accurate count.
Well, Paul does say
there's
a number of them alive,
and the zombies.
What they saw.
Yeah, you're right. There's no detailed descriptions, but go back to Rudolf Bultmann, certainly no friend of believers, and Bultmann says, hey, I don't agree with evidence for the resurrection, but there's no doubt that Paul thinks he's citing evidence for the resurrection when he says some of these guys are still alive. Anyway, not to get too far from my point, all I'm saying is, why is it crazy to think that there could have been 100 unbelievers among 500? I mean,
I don't believe in basing hypotheses on what we don't know. I mean, we don't really have any particular evidence that there were any doubters. When he says brothers, that implies they were already believers.
No, well, what about Paul?
You would need specific evidence to say that there was any particular count of
what about Paul?
People in that group.
What about Paul?
Yes, Paul is the exception, and I imagine he doesn't count himself among the 500 brethren.
No. But anyway, what I'm saying is, Richard, seems like what you're asking is, do we have any cases of skeptics who said, I won't believe until I see him, he appears to them, and they say, sorry, I'm still a skeptic. We don't have any of those.
Turn the other way around, actually. That isn't really what bothers me so much, but I'm thinking from a completely different perspective. My question is, I mean, wouldn't the gospel have been so much more successful and so many more people been saved had Jesus appeared to everyone? Had he appeared to the Roman Senate and the Roman Senate, passed a decree announcing the gospel, for example? Had he appeared to the Chinese at the same time? I mean, imagine the evidence we would have if at the exact same time, 30 A.D., there's an appearance of Jesus communicating throughout China.
Right.
The gospel. I mean,
well, Richard,
if that happened,
I think you might come back and you'd complain then. Well, that's great. He appeared back to them all that time.
It doesn't matter, but he needs to appear to me.
But
what about the billions of Chinese that would have, gotten the gospel earlier, or the number of other people on? I mean, you can't say that there would be no more converts.
No,
if there was more evidence.
Richard, to me, there's an assumption on your part, and the assumption is something like this: God should seek to give empirical evidence to convince as many people as possible with the scientific, historical, and other kinds of data. Maybe that's not God's agenda.
I believe he would be morally obligated to do so. In a way that I would. If I found the cure for cancer and I only revealed it in secret to 500 people, that would be immoral in my worldview, in my perspective. I mean, to me, if I found the cure for cancer, it needs to be announced as widely and as quickly as possible.
And Gary, for me, at least, I'll
argue... And we're talking about something that's way more important than the cure for cancer.
And me, I would just say, but just sufficient evidence, however it may come to me, whatever is sufficient enough. You know, I guess the rebuttal would be someone would have to say, well, God must not...
Evidence for does not accept
each evidence.
Right.
Evidence.
But God, but surely God would know which evidences would convince me, which ones wouldn't. So why would he continue to allow me to get these hardly evidential arguments, you know, for his existence and stuff like that?
But I mean,
don't understand. It doesn't make sense. If he's there, I'd like to know it.
Evidential arguments for his existence?
Yes, there's just hardly, in my opinion, I don't see much evidence, but that's a completely different argument, though.
Reggie and Rich,
I lost track of what was being argued there.
Yeah,
they're hardly evidential, yes.
I'll make a general comment. I know you guys aren't going to concede any of this, but to answer that question from our viewpoint, if you line up, I mean, I'll just give you a list. I know you're not going to like the things in this list, but I'm saying Christians don't think the resurrection is standing out there in a farm field by itself. If you've got on the one hand argument, the other night I heard Dawkins, Richard Dawkins lecture just a few nights ago, and he said he cannot explain morality from an atheistic viewpoint. Okay, if you're going to try to explain a moral argument or intelligent design or cosmology or resurrection or near-death experiences or spontaneous remission of cancer in the presence of... What I'm saying is, if you set up 10 of these things in a row, the worldview is going to look a lot different. In fact, if all we know is that near-death experiences occur and people live after death, if that's all we knew, that alone would make us take a different look at the resurrection, because what we know is, Richard, you'd have to concede, if there were an afterlife...
Well, I agree. If we had absolute proof of the... I mean, I shouldn't say absolute, but if we had convincing proof of the supernatural... That changes the whole argument.
That's right.
That doesn't necessarily win the argument.
You're right. But it sure changes the tape. So earlier we were talking about near-death experiences. If I could show you 10 heavily evidential cases, and you'd say, golly, it looks like... I mean, you know, Ed Babinski, he and I had a two-year dialogue years ago, and Ed finally said... By the way, Ed brought this case to my mind, the one that was on the Houston radio station. Ed pointed it out to me. And Ed, I don't know where Ed is now, but he said one day, you know, this life after death, this near-death thing looks pretty good. Well... If life after death, if a near-death thing, and I hope I'm citing him correctly there, but if a near-death thing turns out to indicate an afterlife, then we have to be twice as open to the claim of resurrection.
Yeah, that doesn't in itself mean that...
It doesn't prove the case.
Even then, I mean...
Richard, would you admit that...
Maybe people spontaneously resurrect as a natural, supernatural power of the human psyche.
It doesn't prove the case.
Explain all the resurrection accounts.
Would you admit that if there were many cases of near-death... You know, cases. If you were to concede that, and I know you don't, but
I think I know where you're going, and I'll phrase it for you. If I were convinced of what you were saying, that there was convincing evidence that the soul was leaving the body or surviving without the activity of the body, then I would no longer be a naturalist.
You'd have to be a little more open to resurrection, wouldn't you?
Well, actually, what I would do then is I would re-examine my previous faith.
There you go.
Taoism.
Good.
Because I think Taoism is a better explanation than Christianity is of all the evidence.
But what I mean
is... And I might end up in other directions as well, but
I
don't think it necessarily pushes us towards Christianity. I agree with you that
resurrection
would add to a case for Christianity.
But you'd have to be a little more open to resurrection than you were previously on this new evidence alone, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I mean, that was my point.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I appreciate you saying that.
All right, well, gentlemen, we are out of time, unfortunately. People in the chat room are saying, wow, too bad a conversation like this is going to take three hours, actually. But, you know, I appreciate it. Bearing with a novice like me who's totally unaware of a lot of these arguments, I really appreciate that. It's 9:03, ladies and gentlemen. Check out the Rational Response Squad. They are up next. In fact, check it out right now. It's primecast.com. Again, Gary and Mike Lacona, thank you very much for appearing on the program. And Richard Carey, thanks for sitting in as my special guest co-host. Appreciate
absolutely.
It.
Thanks, guys. It was a good hour.
Great to be with y'all. Sure good was. To talk with you again, Richard.
Yeah,
all right.
Absolutely.
All right. Good night. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Well, again, that was Gary Habermas and Mike Lacona. In fact, there are some interesting debates at infidel.org featuring some of them as well. And elsewhere on the web, you can find some interesting discussions and debates featuring these guys. So, check them out. Interesting stuff. I guess I want to end this with a comment, and this is, again, it's not really related, but that's why I kept trying to bring it back by saying, for me, just evidence of the supernatural, period, convincing, sufficient evidence, is that would give a little credence more to the resurrection story for myself, so I think it is important when I bring up actual evidences, so-called evidences of the supernatural. But a New York atheist here in the chat room says, the point, of course, is that their God doesn't heal the things that would be impossible to refute as divine intervention. Their God only heals the things that still leave us having to doubt. And it's interesting he says that, because some would argue that's exactly what God wants us to do. He wants that conflict in us. He wants that struggle. He wants us to find him freely. And that is exactly why we have these problems. But then again, on the other side of the coin, you have Christians who would tell you, if you ask them right off the bat, does God want me to know him? They'll tell you yes. And they really believe that God wants everyone to know him. Well, I'm still waiting for the sufficient evidence. I cannot deny that the sun is there. I cannot deny that the moon is there when I see it with my own eyes. I cannot deny air. I cannot deny my beautiful children. Why couldn't evidence be just as sufficient as that? Well, anyway, thanks everyone for listening and watching. I'll see you all another time. In Reason.